Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We wish to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that's going to be bringing Mark Dankoff, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider conventional radio audience in the American South. Our technicians are still working on getting our archives fully uploaded onto the website, which you can find at republicbroadcasting.org. And in the days ahead, of course, we plan on expanding our outreach as well in the international shortwave community. So here we are approaching now yet another week, and now in the middle of March, all kinds of things continuing to develop. I was on Michael Collins Piper's show last night on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We were talking about a series of things related to our mutual pasts in conventional conservative political activism and what it meant to each of us as we began to evolve from that to a more proper understanding of the Constitution of the United States and a real understanding of what the ideological roots of the American right really are. And one of the things that Michael and I spoke about last night was the whole business of the war in Iraq and Middle Eastern policy and Iran and what it really suggests in terms of the old republic as opposed to the direction that we're going in now as far as a war of empire is concerned, and seeing the way in which the war for empire crowd has also been involved in the construction of a domestic Leviathan central government that has increasingly taken away many of the liberties of the average citizens of the country. So that was my appearance last night on the Michael Collins Piper Show, talking about our mutual evolution from being involved in more conventional Republican political activism a generation ago to where we are today. The Washington Post has a very interesting story on page one this morning. It's entitled, "For the U.S. and Sadr, Wary Cooperation. Radical Shiite clerics seen as crucial to success of Baghdad's security plan." Interesting that until a short time ago, the United States was largely demonizing Mr. Sadr. Now it believes that he's absolutely crucial to the success of this so-called new Baghdad security plan. Sudarshan Raghavan, who is with the Washington Post Foreign Service, has this byline today from Baghdad on page one of the Washington Post, and it is as follows. U.S. troops are conducting security sweeps in the Shiite stronghold of Sadr City for the first time in 3 years, part of a revamped plan to pacify the capital. Yet the Mahdi Army militia of Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has not risen up to fight them despite U.S. raids on militia members' homes and growing Sunni attacks on Shiites. Quote, "Until now our leader has ordered us to keep quiet," unquote, explained Ayad al-Kabi, a local official in Sadr's organization. Quote, "This is an order for the security plan to succeed," unquote. After 4 years of hostility, Sadr and the Americans are cooperating uneasily as the United States and Iraq attempt to tame Baghdad's sectarian violence. American officials, who in recent months described Sadr's Mahdi army and other Shiite militias as the biggest threat to Iraq's stability, now praise the Shiite cleric. "The collaboration represents a remarkable shift for two adversaries who control the largest armies in Iraq and who fought some of the fiercest battles since the 2003 U.S.-led invasion. For Sadr, it is the latest stage in an evolution from populist cleric to guerrilla fighter to political kingmaker, and now to power broker. In the early months of the occupation, U.S. officials dismissed Sadr as irrelevant to Iraq's future. Today, they view him as a political catalyst who can help keep Iraq together or implode it." This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Harmony Grant, the National Prayer Network, will join us at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. Stay tuned.
Americans already realize our nation is in deep trouble, needs special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. At around 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, we're going to have Harmony Grant on the show. She works with the Reverend Ted Pike and the National Prayer Network. We're going to chat a little bit about Christian Zionism and about some of this hate bill, hate crimes legislation that's currently before the United States Congress, trying to evaluate exactly what that means in the days ahead for you and for me. I suspect that one of the things that's going to be very, very clear to us in the days ahead is that as Internet technology has given us access to more alternative information to what is being presented to us by the American corporate press, it at the same time has posed all kinds of problems for the political elite that designs to control the political process by controlling information and manipulating it, and by controlling your mind and my mind and everyone else's minds, who in the past has been particularly dependent upon corporate media for their spin, their take on what is going on politically, both in this country and abroad. But as we have seen a movement toward alternative lines of news analysis and information in the last 15 years, in particular because of the Internet, it has caused arguably a major revolution. Largely as yet involving unfired shots, but nonetheless a revolution in the way that people have come to perceive the political elites worldwide and the way in which people in this country, the United States, have come to view their leadership and their leadership's integrity or the lack of it thereof in regard to a whole host of things that the leadership puts out on every conceivable subject, from war to income taxes to the Federal Reserve Board, to whatever it may happen to be. This is an interesting thing, I think, when we speak to Harmony Grant later this morning, representing the National Prayer Network, and talking about the so-called hate crimes legislation as well as some of the things that are going on the part of certain circles to preserve control of the Internet or to expand control of the Internet so that alternative news will find it harder and harder to make its way to the forefront of people's minds. No question about it, as we look at what has happened in our country in recent years, that there has been an increasing crisis of confidence on the part of the American public toward its political leadership. I think that's as it should be. Lawrence Eagleburger, I've made reference to this before on this show, the protege of Henry Kissinger, Lawrence Eagleburger of Council on Foreign Relations fame, nonetheless said something that I thought was very insightful some weeks ago when the Iraq Study Group results first came out. Eagleburger was on ABC's Nightline and was making the statement on that show late one night that there was an unparalleled crisis of confidence in our institutions on the part of our people, and that he thought that the way that the Iraq war had turned out was a real catalyst in this regard. I think Mr. Eagleburger is fundamentally correct. What he may have been driving at, however, is that this whole business of a crisis of confidence should be seen as a negative development. In one sense of the word, it certainly is, but in another sense of the word, maybe it's a positive development. Maybe this crisis of confidence is necessary in order to see a devolution from the present American political situation and crisis into one more closely approximating the constitutionalism of our forefathers. That is what I hope will be the silver lining in the current cloud of all of the political developments that we're seeing both domestically and internationally. If we, in fact, find ourselves in a circumstance where the Iraq war and all the things surrounding this present Middle Eastern crisis should bring the American people to a point of absolutely questioning the entire process and the entire rationale for becoming involved in this quagmire, it may lead to a complete reevaluation of our overall political situation as a whole. Michael Collins Piper and I touched upon this a little bit last night, and maybe that is a theme that needs to be more developed in the days ahead. If we have a circumstance where our government has placed us in harm's way in a foreign conflict that did not fundamentally involve the purposes and the causes, which were the stated purposes and causes for that war prior to March of 2003 on the part of Colin Powell and others, then in fact we have a situation where we're dealing with a whole new ballgame, both in terms of the political credibility issue as it relates to the crisis of confidence that Lawrence Eagleburger has talked about on Nightline, but also we're dealing with a situation where that crisis of confidence may be used in an entirely new way to question the notion that we should expand this military involvement through a preemptive strike on Iran that would involve presumably not simply an aerial operation, but a subsequent committal of ground troops that we presently do not have, ground troops that presumably would have to come from a reinstitution of the military draft in the United States. All of this, in turn, seems to be snowballing and mushrooming in regard to this crisis of confidence issue. And perhaps, just perhaps, as we continue to move to the forefront of what seems to be a terrible and great unfolding tragedy in our midst and before our very eyes in the days ahead, maybe this is what it's going to take to bring us back to a constitutional government again, a constitutional government again that understands that the enumerated powers of the Constitution are absolutely significant when we underscore what our government should be involved in, what it can be involved in, what it constitutionally cannot be involved in, where the original intent of the Founding Fathers is concerned. This is no more important an issue than when it gets into the whole question of war and peace. When do we go to war? Who has the right to declare war? Who has the right to appropriate the funds for war? Who ultimately is going to make the decision as to when we go to war? And how does that whole process unfold? Once again, it seems to me that we have a situation where the crisis of confidence that has been produced by yet another undeclared war, another endeavor that has involved forces that are not operating in the best interest of the American people has presumably placed us now in a situation where we cannot extricate ourselves from this without a larger examination, it seems to me, of the entire set of circumstances that led to this, and without an understanding that this is something that cannot and should not have been allowed to happen, and that we simply have to reclaim our Constitution. That, to me, is the ultimate truism in the entire show that Mike Piper and I were involved with last night, Michael broadcasting, of course, from Washington, D.C. These guys in Washington, D.C. need to understand something about the Constitution of the country and need to understand that essentially it is the duty of every American citizen to evaluate these actions and to evaluate the three branches of our government and to evaluate all of the things that go on in that complex interplay between those three branches of government in terms of the Constitution of the United States. If that happens, all well and good. If it doesn't happen, then we have a situation where the American people, it seems to me, have to make it happen. We have to insist and to demand that our government go no farther when it comes to involving us in situations that are not according to the original intents and foundations of the founding fathers of America and the Constitution that they produced. And I think this certainly extends beyond the whole issue of war-making powers and the whole issue of foreign wars to a series of related circumstances. A direct federal income tax on American citizens and the existence of a Federal Reserve Board are just two of the additional items that we could talk about this morning that relate to a steady erosion of constitutional liberties on the part of the American people and the construction of a Leviathan central government which has not only usurped constitutionally prerogatives and powers that were never its right to usurp in terms of the Constitution of the United States, but now we're seeing clearly a transfer, a willing transfer of sovereignties and powers from a Leviathan federal government to the institutions of a new world order. And certainly as we examine this whole question of a Middle Eastern war, all of these things have to be seen in that context, I would argue, and that when we ask government or demand of government that it return to constitutional practices and that those things that are not according to the Constitution of this country be curbed and be jettisoned, this whole issue of involvement in foreign wars that are not in the interest of the American people be reevaluated and be stopped while there is yet time. This clearly is something, curiously enough, that we have been watching in poll numbers in recent days. I don't know how many of you follow establishment corporate polls in our news media. Sometimes I discount them completely. Other times I think, despite the best attempts of the political elites to mask what's going on, these polls may reveal something that actually is a significant indicator of mass American public opinion. I think personally that there is and has been in recent months a massive shift away from acceptance of this war, a massive shift away from an acceptance of the explanations and presuppositions behind this war that was offered to us 4 years ago by the American political establishment, as we saw that expressed in Colin Powell's speech before the UN Security Council, indicating that Saddam Hussein had so-called weapons of mass destruction. As that shift has occurred in the poll numbers and in public opinion, in this case, I think, if anything, a conservative estimate in regard to the plummeting character of American support for what is going on in the Middle East, therein may lie the seeds of a larger opportunity, and that is to regain control of our own house, regain control of our Constitution, regain control of a situation, or whether we're talking about federal direct income taxes, or we're talking about a Federal Reserve Board, or who and what it is that must come into play in regard to involvement of this country in a foreign conflict, that we regain the old republic again. I can't emphasize that strongly enough, that is the issue, I think, that has been fundamentally misunderstood by many well-meaning people in the Republican Party at the grassroots level, who have continued to support Republican presidents and Republican politicians, regardless of how far astray their policies were from the Constitution of the country. We simply have to see that these kinds of policies are not an alternative to what is going on in the Democratic Party, that both parties have been a full partner in the destruction of the Constitution of the United States. Both parties have been a supporter of imperial presidencies. Both parties have been supporters of an activist federal judiciary that has attempted to act successfully in recent decades as a legislature. Both parties have been a willing participant in a foreign policy that has involved interventionism, a foreign policy that has involved a massive shift away from the principles of the founding fathers of the United States, a complete repudiation of the foreign policy of George Washington, a complete repudiation of the foreign policy of Jefferson. And as we have seen that occurring in regard to the foreign policy of the United States, so once again we come full circle to something that Dr. Jacob Hornberger of the Future Freedom Foundation has been emphasizing time and time again in recent months and years, and that is that the government that acts in that fashion politically abroad is the same government who is going to rob its citizens of their political liberties at home. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Harmony Grant of the National Prayer Network will be with us at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're going to be joined at right around 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, by Harmony Grant, who works with Ted Pike at the National Prayer Network. Harmony and I are going to talk a little bit about Christian Zionism and also talk about hate crimes legislation, what it is, what it means for you and for me, what kinds of things are behind this hate crimes legislation, and what it is that the political elite seeks to do in this country by having this legislation in the way of shutting off legitimate political debate and public discourse and the viable, legitimate utilization of First Amendment rights to talk about things that the elite doesn't want us to talk about. I would suggest that that's going to be a very important component in American society in the days ahead. Hate crimes legislation being one, internet regulation being a second. These two things go hand in hand, I argue, in trying to stifle dissent, legitimate dissent, peaceful dissent, and peaceful conversation and discussion of things that the American political corporate elite does not want us talking about in public, in regard to their policies and who's behind their policies and how far afield those policies are from the Constitution of our country, the political traditions of this country, and the interests of the average American. So that's going to be Harmony Grant at right around 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, coming to us from the National Prayer Network and talking about some very, very important issues related to hate crimes legislation and also this whole business of Christian Zionism. You know, last night when Michael Collins Piper and I were talking on his show, he was saying some very insightful things, as usual, about the way in which those of us on the American right who have been in complete disagreement with the government and with the Bush wing of the Republican Party on this war have unbelievably been pilloried with charges of being leftists or anti-American, or pinkos, or collectivists, or pacifists, or a whole host of other things that are absolute canards, not to mention being libelous. In regard to this whole issue of the Iraq War, it becomes very clear that those of us on the right who from the beginning have been speaking out against this thing, including Michael Collins Piper and Pat Buchanan and Paul Craig Roberts, are in fact simply trying to recover the best instincts and the best policy positions and the best ideological and philosophical presuppositions of the old American right. Let's face it, folks, the old American right understood that entangling foreign alliances would enshroud this country in conflicts that would simply destroy any semblance of constitutional government at home. And in that regard, I've been struck by the issue of the American Free Press, the latest issue that I have, dated March 5th and 12th, 2007, which has a special supplement in it. And that special supplement is the text of George Washington's farewell address. I would suspect that probably no one today in American public schools is reading the text of this address. Maybe I'm wrong. It would be interesting to know, for example, in our grade schools and middle schools and high schools today, how many young people have actually seen George Washington's farewell address text, and how many have even seen reference made to it on the part of teachers in their respective classrooms dealing with civics and political science and American history. But I'm going to come back to this text after the break to underscore what Mike Piper was talking about last night. That opposition to this present policy in the Middle East is not a leftist or Marxist idea. It is an American idea, firmly rooted in Washington's farewell address, firmly rooted in the Constitution of our land. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We've been talking about a little bit in the last 30 minutes, a couple of news stories. Also talking about my conversations last night with Michael Collins Piper on his show on RBN, speaking about the whole absurd way in which those of us on the American right who've been talking about this war from the proper perspective, the constitutional perspective in the last 4 years, have sometimes been assailed in the news media and have been assailed by elements of the Bush administration with the ridiculous charge of being leftist or pacifist or pro-communist or some other thing, when in fact it is very clear, looking at the constitutional history of this country, that George Washington's farewell address is the light in which we need to see the traditional old right concern about this war and criticism of this war, as well as the old right's reticence to become involved in any foreign conflict that was not truly in the national interest of the United States. I'm going to be saying something a little bit more about George Washington's farewell address this morning, reading a portion of it from the supplement that is in the March 7th and 12th American Free Press. Before I do that, however, I wanted to draw your attention to something that Scott McConnell has written for the American Conservative that to me is quite hopeful. For those of you who are involved in alternative media, either being a part of it on the production end or being involved with it on the receiving end as one who, say, listens to the Republic Broadcasting Network or who reads American Free Press, this is an item, Scott McConnell's item today at the American Conservative, that should cause us to take heart, as well as to evaluate who and what could be behind the hate crimes legislation and the attempts to regulate the Internet. Scott McConnell's piece is entitled Bloggers Versus the Lobby. Israel's propaganda fortress faces a surprising new challenge. I want to read from what Scott McConnell has said on this directly from the American Conservative this morning, where Scott states, quote, "Despite the failure in Iraq, the repudiation of the president's foreign policy and opinion polls in the 2006 elections, and the collapse of respect for the U.S. and most other countries, support for the Bush doctrine of preventive war remains surprisingly intact among one important slice of Americans, the presidential candidates of both major parties. New York Times columnist David Brooks recently lamented that Democratic contenders were sounding soft, crafting their foreign policy positions to generate applause lines in Iowa, quote unquote. He needn't have worried. The parade of White House aspirants to appear before a hawkish Israeli audience in Herzliya and an equally hawkish AIPAC crowd in New York is a truer gauge of where leading candidates stand. On New Year's Day, Israeli superhawk Benjamin Netanyahu called for an intense international public relations front, quote unquote, to persuade Americans of the need for military confrontation with Iran. The sight of John Edwards addressing a conference in Israel by satellite feed, along with John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, and Mitt Romney, the latter two actually flew in to speak in person, indicated that the front already exists. All the candidates spoke as if preemptive war in the Middle East was a tried and true success. As a correspondent from Jewish Week summed it up, the U.S. presidential hopefuls were, quote, competing to see who can be most strident in defense of the Jewish state, unquote. The consensus choice for the competition's winner was Romney, but the putatively liberal Edwards, who described preventing Iran from securing nuclear weapons as, quote, the greatest challenge of our generation, unquote, made a surprisingly strong showing. No leading presidential contender suggested that attacking Iran might be a bad idea. This hawkishness is actually an earlier sentiment popular only among those running for office. In Washington, it's difficult to find a foreign policy expert who thinks that any good would come of a strike on Iran. Even the neocons have their doubts. The Iraq War, a miserable concept that it was, had far more respected backers. American military options are poor. Surgical airstrikes wouldn't do anything decisive to Iran's nuclear program, but they would create huge problems for Americans in Iraq and perhaps lead to a two- or three-fold rise in the price of oil. The U.S. lacks the troops to enforce regime change through a land invasion and has already demonstrated its inability to successfully occupy a Muslim country one-third Iran's size. Furthermore, Iran, according to U.S. intelligence estimates, is 10 years away from a nuclear weapon. Its seemingly nutty current president is losing support in the country. Those most theologically opposed to the Shia Islam that Tehran espouses are the very Al-Qaeda Sunnis who set this dreadful train of events in motion in the first place. So why do leading politicians line up for the Bush Doctrine, take two? On the Republican side, it might be explained by a desire to cater to elements of the Christian right that believe a final showdown with Islam is called for on religious grounds, or to talk radio listeners who want to nuke the Islamo-fascists, quote-unquote, because that's what weapons are made for. Such groups form part of the GOP base. But what of Edwards? What of Hillary Clinton, both eager to be on the record for keeping all options on the table? It's a question that cannot be truthfully answered without reference to the neuralgic subject of the Israel lobby. It is a tough issue to address, as General Wesley Clark, a middle-of-the-pack Democratic presidential contender in 2004, recently discovered. Upon reading an Arnaud de Borchgraf column that discussed a then-incipient Israeli campaign to pressure Hillary Clinton and other Democrats to, quote, publicly support immediate action by Bush against Iran, unquote, he lost his cool, saying to Arianna Huffington, quote, how can you talk about bombing a country when you won't even talk to them? It's outrageous. We're the United States of America. We don't do that, unquote. Pressed by Huffington to explain why he was sure Bush would attack Iran, he answered, quote, you just have to read what's in the Israeli press. The Jewish community is divided, but there is so much pressure being channeled from the New York money people to the office seekers, unquote. This was an awkward way to put it. The euphemism surely sounded more contentious than anything Clark might have said straightforwardly. And, of course, some people chose to ignore Clark's correct assertion that the Jewish community was very divided on the Iran issue. Within days, the general was caught in a familiar crossfire, smeared as an instigator of anti-Semitism by some Republican Jewish organizations. His remarks headlined as, quote, Protocols of the New York Money People, unquote, by a Wall Street Journal columnist. Soon, General Clark was engaged in a humiliating apology and repentance ritual with Abe Foxman of the ADL. At this point, the story could have taken the same path it has virtually taken every time something similar has happened since 1970. The originator of the quote-unquote anti-Semitic gaffe apologizes. Some taint remains attached to his name, and everyone is reminded once again of the perils of crossing swords with a lobby, quote-unquote. But things took a different course for significant reasons. It hasn't yet been established that the blogosphere has changed the nature of American politics in any fundamental way. Obviously, it can quickly focus a great deal of attention on something. Trent Lott's seemingly appreciative remarks on Strom Thurmond's racial views of 60 years ago, for example, that might have gone completely unnoticed, thus turning Washington into even more of a fishbowl. And some minor lesson can probably be learned from John Edwards' awkward effort to hire quote-unquote edgy left-wing bloggers with all the unedited vulgarities they bring with them. But blogs may foment serious debate about difficult subjects and change the climate of opinion in meaningful ways. In the aftermath of Herzliya and the Clark episode, it seemed as if this was actually happening. For within a day or two, one could read in the blogs some surprising assertions that amounted to a truth defense of Wes Clark. It seemed to come primarily from young or comparatively young Jewish bloggers. Observations that had been bandied about for years in private seemed to burst forth where many people could see them. This was welcome and suggests a broadening and deepening of the peace movement that so notably failed to stop the Iraq War. Suddenly there were Jewish voices talking about the Israel lobby as an established fact, and to be frank, as a bit of a problem. Significantly, these were not voices from an older and more alienated Chomskyan left, but from an American prospect like liberal mainstream. In early February, Glenn Greenwald, a New York attorney who recently published a book on the Patriot Act, wrote a blog entry that focused on the New York AIPAC gathering attended by both John Edwards and Hillary Clinton. Greenwald quoted an article from the New York Sun. There is no more unimpeachably right-wing Zionist source available that featured Democratic political consultant Hank Scheinkopf's claim that, quote, New York is the ATM for American politicians. Large amounts of money come from the Jewish community. If you want dollars from that group, you need to show that you're interested in the issue that matters the most to them, unquote. The issue that matters most, the article went on to say, is Israel. And what this group most wants to hear with regard to Israel is commitment to bellicosity toward Iran. Edwards and Mrs. Clinton did their best to comply, though according to a report in the equally Likud-friendly New York Post, Clinton apparently disappointed some in attendance by suggesting that diplomacy might be attempted before a war. Quote, this is the wrong crowd to do that with, unquote, commented one attendee. Greenwald went on to point out that these articles made exactly the same point that Wes Clark made, adding, quote, it is simply true that there are large and extremely influential Jewish donor groups which are agitating for a U.S. war against Iran, and that is the case because those groups are devoted to promoting Israel's interests, and they perceive it to be in Israel's interests for the United States to militarily confront Iran, unquote. Greenwald's post was not the only one. Matthew Iglesias, a young writer with a blog and similar political orientation, also addressed the Clark issue, noting that while Jewish opinion was divided on Iran, quote, everything Clark said, in short, is true. What's more, everyone knows it's true, unquote. Iglesias pointed out that it is seemingly permissible to refer to the financial clout Jews wield in the Democratic Party if one is being supportive of America's self-proclaimed pro-Israel forces, but if you're critical of this influence, you're denounced as an anti-Semite. Ezra Klein, another young blogger, also referred to the Clark episode, and his post addressed the question that underlies the entire issue, the vulnerability of Israel to Iranian nuclear weapons. Did not the concentration of Jews in a small state surrounded by hostile neighbors raise questions about the usefulness of the Zionist enterprise in general, since the whole point was to make Jews more rather than less secure? Of course, any sensible person recognizes that an Iranian nuclear weapon would raise serious strategic concerns for Israel, likely forcing it into the deterrent posture of mutual assured destruction that the United States had to endure during much of the Cold War. Addressing these dilemmas, one regrettably anonymous commenter on Klein's blog wrote, quote, I'd suggest a second conclusion. make friends with the neighbors. We've got a long history of doing it, only this time it would be from a position of strength, which is ultimately the purpose of the State of Israel. Yes, there are deep-rooted, generational hostilities at play, but we Jews excel at all sorts of things that make life better for people. The practice of medicine and law, scientific research, and yes, commerce. If there were a real commitment, not just to peace, but to regional prosperity, it would happen, unquote. However unrealistic this vision might seem in the near term, it deserves to be quoted at length. Its noble vision stands alone against the tremendously well-funded propaganda edifice of the Israeli lobby, from AIPAC and the Anti-Defamation League to the American Jewish Committee and multiple other groups, whose dank worldview reaches deep into the conservative think tanks and the upper echelons of the Bush administration. The AIPAC sensibility is expressed in cruder form by right-wing talk radio hosts who every day try to soften up their listeners to the idea of American nuclear strikes against Muslim cities. But this hopeless view of the world, however, is much amplified by today's Jewish establishment, but is not the only perspective of American Jews. Indeed, it is not even the majority view. A poll by the American Jewish Committee revealed that support among Jews for a military strike against Iran had dropped from 49% last year to 38% at present. One could argue that the dovish sentiment expressed by the commenter on the Klein blog is not only more grounded in history, human nature, and the particular Jewish experience than the one we hear from the American Jewish establishment before which Clinton, Edwards, Romney, and Giuliani kowtow. Is it really practical to think that Israel's long-term security needs can be satisfied by having the United States smash the country's potential enemies as they arise, again and again? The blogosphere is playing a role in bringing to the fore these kinds of dissenting views, though they may be majority views, letting them circulate and evolve under the test of critical argument. But even without the blogs, there have been signs that the lobby's edifice is cracking. How else can one interpret the amazing document published by the American Jewish Committee last month, which accused several prominent Jews, American Jews, of anti-Semitism because of their criticisms of current Israeli policies? It is one thing to claim that Christians who criticize Israel or the American relationship to Israel are motivated by anti-Semitism. This has long been a standard rhetorical tactic. But to wield that word against Jews, several of them very prominent in journalism, culture, and academia, seem so silly as to be a symptom of something like panic, as if the traditional big powers feel the debate about Israel and American foreign policy is veering out of their control. Perhaps the American Jewish Committee's targets really weren't only Professor Tony Jute or playwright Tony Kushner or even the Washington Post's Richard Cohen, the latter hardly a strident critic of Israel. As Iglesias bluntly explained it, quote, "The idea basically is to scare the goyim who figure that while liberal Jews can take the heat, they probably can't and had best just avoid talking about the whole thing," unquote. Iglesias is on to something important here, though the situation is more complicated than he described. Both Jews and Gentiles have been raising the volume of discussion about the American-Israeli relationship and Israeli policies. On the Jewish side, there is a profusion of important peace-oriented websites. The explosion of interest in the Walt Mearsheimer essay in Jimmy Carter's book events a Christian awakening of the Mideast's critical importance. The perilous present geopolitical context explains this. A great many people wouldn't risk the opprobrium of the lobby for the sake of the Palestinians, who often wage their struggle far less impressively than one might wish. But letting the lobby influence American foreign policy toward Iraq raises the stakes mightily. Allowing Bibi Netanyahu and his American allies to call the tune of U.S. policy toward Iran is far too much to bear. But it's true that many Christians won't enter this battle without Jewish allies, or at least will join it with less enthusiasm. It's not simply that they can't take the heat. It's that those who have spent much time in journalism or academia or trying to influence public policy have generally done so alongside Jews and are accustomed to having Jews play significant roles in their personal and professional lives. To fight a battle without Jewish colleagues or even against Jewish colleagues is likely to feel rather lonely. This is no doubt less true for hardcore Christian Zionists, curiously the most aggressively Likudnik of all segments of Christian opinion, than it is for other Gentiles. but it is this sentiment that makes the new effervescence of Jewish dissent so important for the country at the present moment. It opens a door for Christians to voice opinions they might otherwise keep to themselves, not for fear of what Abe Foxman might say about them, but out of the discomfort of being isolated from the urban, quote-unquote, cosmopolitan Jewish-influenced milieu of which they have long been part. It may be beyond the American people's power to stop George W. Bush from launching another preemptive war, but even though the president and his top advisors can isolate themselves from currents of public opinion, this is less the case for top military officers. This is Scott McConnell's article for the American Conservative today, entitled Bloggers Versus the Lobby. Israel's propaganda fortress faces a surprising new challenge. We'll be back with that article and with George Washington's farewell address when Mark Dankoff returns on RBN. Stay tuned.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be joined at right around 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, by Harmony Grant of Ted Pike's National Prayer Network. Harmony and I are going to be talking a little bit about Christian Zionism, maybe talking more extensively about some of this hate crimes legislation that's currently being kicked around in the Congress, and what it means, and who's behind it, and what the ultimate agenda is of those who are pushing this legislation. That, again, will be Harmony Grant at shortly after 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. As most of you know who listen to my show, this is a time for frequent commercial breaks in the next 10 minutes or so. So bear with me and bear with us. You can support the Republic Broadcasting Network by contacting us at www.republicbroadcasting.org or giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's republicbroadcasting.org or at 1-800-724-2719. You can also have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism. That's obtainable directly from the Republic Broadcasting Network using those same contact points, republicbroadcasting.org or giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That DVD is available for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. And again, that's republicbroadcasting.org or 1-800-724-2719. And if you have a question for me today, you can call in at 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. Been talking a little bit this morning about some of the things I was chatting with Mike Piper about on his show last night on the Republic Broadcasting Network, speaking specifically of the way in which both Mark Dankoff and Michael Collins Piper have had a real evolution from what at one time was pretty much a commitment to a traditional brand of republicanism, or so we thought, to a clearer understanding of what the problems are for the old republic and how this relates to constitutionalism and how this relates as well to the forces that are behind the attempt to destroy the old republican in this country. And today, as we consider that rather grim notion, a couple of things come into play. One is Scott McConnell's piece today for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. We've been reading from that piece up to this point in the show. It's entitled Bloggers Versus the Lobby. Israel's propaganda fortress faces a surprising new challenge. I'm going to continue from the text of McConnell's article and then talk a little bit about what I think the implications of it are. Also in the next hour, we're going to be looking a little bit at the actual text of George Washington's farewell address to underscore what Michael Collins Piper was repeatedly emphasizing last night, and that is that the position he takes and that I take on this war in the Middle East are not leftist ideas, not leftist or Marxist positions at all. This is an American first, old republic, old American right position to take, both in regard to foreign interventionism and foreign wars, as well as on things like direct federal income tax levies on American citizens and Federal Reserve Board policies. The old right understood how far afield these things are from the Constitution of the country. And when we understand that, we can criticize these things not from a leftist perspective, but from a pro-American, pro-Constitution perspective. And that, I think, is what the American Free Press is all about. It's certainly what the Republic Broadcasting Network is all about. Back to Scott McConnell's article from the American Conservative entitled Bloggers Versus the Lobby. Israel's propaganda fortress faces a surprising new challenge. Scott continues by saying that it may be beyond the American people's power to stop George W. Bush from launching another preemptive war. But even though the president and his top advisors can isolate themselves from currents of public opinion, that is less the case for top military officers. And it is far more likely that they will find ways to raise meaningful speed bumps and roadblocks on the route to an expanded war if there is a large enough public outcry against it. That means you and me, folks. Mark Dankoff's America will be back on the Republic Broadcasting Network, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas. Stay tuned.